Welcome to the Brew Files from Experimental Brewing, our quick hit series where we focus on fundamental aspects of brewing, including styles, techniques, and recipes. More brew, more flavor, more stories, less time, and still less ukulele.
And we're all happy about that.
Now, in this episode, spring has sprung, and it's time to think of warm weather drinks. I mean, at least here in Southern California, it's about to be 80 in a couple days. So, warm weather. It's here. I need something to drink during this period of time. And in the litany of oft-forgotten beer styles that only those of us who've been around the beer world for a while will remember, there was the once ubiquitous American wheat. Not a Hefeweizen, but the American wheat.
Yeah.
Denny, what's your experience with American wheat?
Most of my experience with American wheat comes from the days before I started homebrewing. So that was over 25 years ago. Widmer Hefeweizen was very popular and sold by the case at Costco. And we went through a lot of that while we were sitting down in our little stretch of river.
And of course, it's stirring much confusion. But for this episode, we're going to look at what it takes to make this style and what you can do with it.
But before we do that, here's a message from our sponsors. The next generation of countertop home distillation systems is here. The all-new AirStill Pro from Still Spirits is a revolutionary still that will look right at home alongside your everyday kitchen appliances. This small batch 2-in-1 distillation system operates in either pot still or reflux mode and allows you to craft high quality light and dark spirits at home. No hoses, no complicated assembly, just plug and play. The AirStill Pro column cools itself with a built-in high-powered fan. The Still Spirits AirStill Pro is available now at your favorite homebrew retailer. Learn more about the AirStill Pro at stillspirits.com or check them out on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube.
Welcome back, everybody. Remember, as always, if you interact with any of our sponsors, tell them that you heard about them here on the Brew Files so they know they can keep giving us money, because money makes the world go round. Now, way back in the day when brew pubs still roamed the earth and were a new and wonderful thing that made people go, wait, you can make beer locally and you serve it with food? There were a number of standard styles that would be made, but have since kind of been forgotten in this rush to make everything into either a Pilsner, a lager, or an IPA, or some variation thereof. Now, we've talked about the brown ale here on the show. We talked with Wild Fields Brewing Company up there in Atascadero, and about their multi-award-winning Monolith Brown Ale, which, by the way, is excellent, and you can go find that in the Brew Files. We'll include a link to that in the show notes. But another forgotten, once absolutely ubiquitous style, was the American wheat beer. I mean, back in the day, I think every brew pub that you went into, they'd have an American wheat ale, a blonde, a brown, a porter, and maybe a pale ale. Or
yeah, right.
some selection there of that mix.
Yeah, it used to be that American wheat was everywhere, but that was 25, 30 years ago.
Yep. Now, to be absolutely clear, despite all the confusion that Widmer has thrown into this pile, when we say
yeah.
American wheat beer, we mean something that is blonde, full of wheat, doughy flavors, and absolutely in no way, shape, or form related to the idea of a banana, clovey, Bavarian Hefeweizen.
Yes, yes. And again, like Drew said, that's where Widmer really muddied the waters by calling their beer a Hefeweizen, when actually they had just invented a new style all their own.
Right. Now, the thing about the American wheat beer is, I mean, it's a super, super approachable beer. I think, Denny, you had a term for it before we were talking.
Yeah, I would say that it is an inoffensive beer, you know. It may not be your style, but it may be,
It may not be your style, but that's likely to be because of the very mild flavor, as opposed to like any kind of like really strong, over the top characteristics about it.
Yeah. And in fact, I mean, in a lot of ways, one, you got to remember, Widmer launched an empire on this and eventually ended up got being bought by ABI, largely on the strength of sales of the Widmer Hef. But this is a slightly sweet, doughy sort of beer. You know, it got those sweet, wheaty notes to it. Fairly low hop character in at least the usual varieties. And it was really a mainstay staple at brewpubs everywhere. I really don't think you I don't think you could go into a brewpub and they didn't have a wheat beer. Because what it really, really, really meant, and this was very important in the days before people figured out that they could do lagers in a schedule at a regular brewery, what it really meant, it was the style of beer that they could point to whenever somebody walked into the bar and said, yeah, hey man, what do you got that's like a Bud Light?
Well, we've got a wheat beer that's not really like a Bud Light, but it's going to be close enough if you can't tell the difference.
Well, I still think one of the funniest conversations I ever observed was at Crown City Brewing Company in about 1998-1999, when somebody came in and said, oh, you guys make your own beer here. What do you have that's like a Bud Light? And of course, they had Bud Light in cans. But they're like, oh, well, we have this this wheat beer. And they served the wheat beer to this guy. And the guy's like, oh, no, that's too strong. It's too flavorful. I'm like, The other thing that that the American wheat beer had going for it, again, this is also due to Widmer, as a little bit of a show of class and panache, was the addition of a fruit wedge, like a lemon, which, by the way, don't add a lemon to your Bavarian Hefeweizen. But this is very much a once ubiquitous style that has kind of been completely forgotten, right? I can't think of the last time I walked into a brewery and saw just a plain Jane American wheat beer. Can you, Denny?
Yeah, I agree. Yep. No,
All right. And by the way, before anybody gets too grumpy about what we're saying about Widmer or the fact that Widmer did all this stuff like a Hefeweizen and whatnot, keep in mind that Kurt was very much inspired by his travels and his studies around Germany. And I think if I remember correctly, he studied in Dusseldorf too. So Widmer knew what Hefeweizen was. They knew exactly what they were doing. This just happened to be what the American public glommed on to. Let's talk American wheat beer. Now, one, we'll talk about our own experiences with it. I've brewed a number of American wheat beers, but it's not in my regular rotation. I tend to build something on the basis of Kent Fletcher's Elkwood wheat recipe, but we'll include a recipe here in the show notes and in the program itself. I also tend to play around a lot with what an American wheat beer is, as opposed to just serving an American wheat beer. Now, Denny, you had said that back before you started homebrewing, you and Paula went through cases of Widmer Hef.
Yeah, right.
What about brewing your own American wheat?
I've done it a few times because it's one of those really mild beers. It's not one of the styles that I drink or brew frequently. As a matter of fact, I haven't brewed one in probably over 20 years. I think the last one I brewed, I put blueberries in it, and it was the only beer my mother ever drank in her entire 84 years.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it, I don't know if my mom's ever had one of my beers. She's not a beer person.
Yeah, well, I mean, my mom had nothing against drinking, but she wasn't a beer person. But she saw that beer. It had the blueberries in it. It was this kind of like lovely pink purple color, sucked her right in, and she actually had a couple of them. So I consider that a major coup.
See, and thinking about that, it reminds me way back in the day when dinosaurs still roamed the earth and the Red Sox were playing in Fenway and people weren't talking about trying to replace Fenway. Thank God they still haven't. Right across the way from Fenway, there was Boston Beer Works. And it was a chain that got up to, I don't know, probably like a half dozen locations before they kind of shut down around COVID. But they were famous for their blueberry wheat beer. And they would serve it to you with blueberries floating in it. And
that's cute.
Oh yeah. It was a nice little gimmick. And the only problem was before games, like if Fenway was active, they switched away from glasses to plastic because naturally, right. And there was a while there where they wouldn't do the blueberries in the beer if you were there during a game. And that was always annoying.
Okay.
But yeah, so there you go. There's one of my earliest memories of blueberry wheat ales. They're ubiquitous. Toss a little ginger in there. It helps. All right. So we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's talk American wheat beer itself. It is style 1D in the current BJCP guidelines as we're talking. The original gravity, according to those guidelines, goes between 1040 to 1055, 15 to 30 IBUs, and somewhere between 4 and 5.5% alcohol by volume. Reality may vary from those numbers.
Yeah, very much so.
Obviously, Widmer is sort of the granddad of this style in a lot of ways. It is the hallmark against which a lot of things will get measured. Widmer says on their website that they are coming in at about 1046 OG, right? So that's right in that middle of the range. They claim about 26 IBUs and about 4.9% ABV. So right down the middle of the tunnel there for the BJCP guidelines.
Yeah, yeah.
Malt. This is going to be a little different. If you know about Bavarian Hefeweizens, you'll usually hear people talk about, you know, oh, yeah, it's 30% or 40% malted barley versus 70 or 60% of malted wheat. American hefs almost always turn that ratio around.
Right.
So American wheat beers are almost always more like 50-50 wheat and malt or 70 barley versus 30% wheat. And that mix is usually something fairly simple, like a domestic Pilsner malt or a domestic pale malt. Domestic wheat malt, usually, because people aren't going to be shelling out to go get a bunch of Weyermann. And then sometimes, not always, you'll see other character malts in there. And we're talking small additions of, say, Munich or a Karahel, you know, which are both, Karahel's kind of just a pale German crystal, right? Right. Widmer itself, they claim to use a malt from Bries called Extra Special. And Extra Special, if you go and you look at the product description on that from Bries, it reads like a super toasted marshmallow version of a C120.
Yeah, right. Well, I think it's like just a darker version of their special roast.
Right. But I got to imagine, given how the color on Widmer versus the color on that, they're using just the tiniest little bit of this in that beer in order to pop that orange note.
That would be my guess too. You know, it's 130 L malt. So geez, that's pretty darn dark. And in a beer that light, you'd notice if there was much of it in there at all.
Yeah. And I'm thinking for like a 5 gallon batch, probably, or for any batch, if you're talking 30% wheat and 70% barley malt, I'd probably just put like an addition like that around like a 1%. You know?
Yeah, I don't think you would want very much of it at all. I think that probably just enough to hit your color, because like you're saying, there can't be enough in there to contribute much to the flavor. Although, again, I'm sitting here right now looking at a picture of Widmer Hef, and it's not your pale yellow beer like you usually see. It is definitely more of an orange gold color. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, if you're worried about any sort of flavor additions, you could always do like the classic trick of like, look, I added a little Carafa 2 or Carafa 3. This is, I think, effectively being used in the same fashion, just without a roast.
You know, maybe. I think that the roast is likely
more red.
Yeah, well, and I think that there may be enough in there to make a flavor contribution, but, you know, this is strictly a guess on my part, just based on looking at the color of the beer.
Yep. So, again, 50-50 barley malt versus wheat malt, or, you know, 70% barley malt, 30% wheat malt is pretty typical. Maybe a small touch of a character malt.
Right.
Now, water. These beers, again, are not meant to be dry and crisp. They're meant to read more full. So if we're looking at brewing water, I would say go yellow balanced or yellow full. Depends upon where you want that flavor profile to land. I'd probably go balanced myself, just so I'm not like with a mouthful of chloride.
Yeah. And again, use the color of the beer to guide you. Just looking at this, again, looking at this Widmer, I'm not sure that I would use a yellow profile for that. I might be tempted to go for the low end of the amber profiles.
That's fine. I mean, most of the American wheats I make are very yellow. So,
yeah, I was going to say, yeah, just take a clue from the beer that you're formulating.
Yep. Okay. hops, there's going to be a lot of variations that you can do for hops. We'll cover that in a little bit here. But sort of your classic versions are going to be a lot of your sort of older school American hops, a lot of Willamette.
Yeah, definitely Willamette.
Yeah, I mean, Willamette will be all over the place because it is, I mean, I think Willamette's my favorite sort of American noble, you know, hop. With big quotations around noble.
I'll take Mount Hood, thanks.
There you go. Mount Hood's a pretty good one, too. But Willamette has all those nice kind of spicy, herbal, you know, slightly tea-like notes that something like a Tettenang or a Middleford would have. Maybe just a little bit more, like a little extra in the palate. But the one advantage I will give to both Willamette and Mount Hood over, say, Zots and Middleford and Tettenang that we get here in the States as homebrewers, the Mount Hood and Willamette are going to be fresher and probably in better shape.
Yeah, right.
And then also keeping it classic, old school varieties like Cascade would be very, very used in this style, not to a high level, right? Remember the BJCP guidelines saying 15 to 30, Widmer saying they have 26. I usually go somewhere right around that 25 range. And so you're not talking about a lot. It's just a kiss.
Yeah, I'm with you too.
Yeah. And then you were digging up, you said Widmer uses a blend that they call Alchemy, right?
Right.
Which is really just a year-to-year changeover blend to sort of nail a certain flavor profile.
They use it mainly for bittering. They say that they're high alpha, low cohumulone hops. The blend changes all the time, just trying to get a consistent kind of quality from those hops. So they blend whatever will give them something close to whatever the last batch was.
And I mean, look, that's shockingly common. I think Budweiser uses.
Oh, yeah.
Last time I checked, I think Budweiser's using something like 8 different varieties blended at, you know, various stages in order to get a consistent hop character.
And I thought maybe even more than that. But yeah, basically that's the idea.
Yep.
And they're not the only ones. I mean, tons and tons of breweries do things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Once you start to make consistency part of your flavor profile, you have to play tricks with agricultural products. Going on from our hops, yeast. So this one's kind of a fun one because if you go and you look at both Y Yeast and White Labs, they both have American Hefeweizen or American wheat strains. White Labs is 1010. Y Yeast is 1010. White Labs is 320. And the rumors that I've seen out there and the stuff I've read is that's just basically the Widmer strain, which is an alt strain. I mean, a wheat beer strain.
Well, reportedly, we don't know that for a fact, but that's the rumor is that the Widmer yeast came from Zumeriga and that became Y-Yeast 1010. Yep. Makes sense to me. I can believe that.
Right. And then, of course, unsurprisingly here in the U.S., a bunch of these American wheat beers are made with the whole Chico complex, right? So 1056, White Labs 001, US 05, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. About anything that's going to give you a clean fermentation profile is going to be perfect.
Yeah, something fairly neutral. Now, obviously, if you're using something like that American wheat strain or an alt strain or German beer strain, then you're going to want to go with a relatively cool ferment. And by relatively cool, we mean 63, 64-ish. You will see some people who go absolutely bananas and go 60 or below, which at which point in time you're kind of making a wheat lager in a way. But keep it fermented cool. Haze is perfectly acceptable in the style. In fact, one of the big changes for Widmer was they talked about in the early days, they only had enough room in the brewery to make 2 styles at a time, one of which was an alt and the other one, which was a Weizen. And one of their first big accounts asked them for a third beer, and all they did was not filter the Weizen to make the Hefeweizen. So this is where that split comes from if you read Kurt Widmer and Jeff Allworth's interview with him. So haze is perfectly acceptable. usually most American places are going to carb it to a kind of a standard 2.5, 2.7 range in terms of volumes of CO2. That's perfectly acceptable. I actually prefer for my wheat beers to have a little more carbonation to them because I think it helps make them feel a little bit more lively.
You know, I definitely would agree with that, too. I think that's the kind of style that can really benefit from a little bit of a jacked up carbonation.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, if you think of Bavarian Hefeweizen, Bavarian Hefeweizen is usually much higher in carbonation, too, right? It's how you get that nice, beautiful, rocky head that climbs up out of the glass. Everybody's talking about packaging, you know, and kind of keeping O2 out of the keg or the bottle because everybody's worried about their hop characters. I will say here with wheat beers, I also think that reducing oxygen intake is actually a good idea because I've had the wheat beers I've had that have been oxidized get a very strong hammy flavor to them.
Ooh.
Yeah. And while I like ham on a sandwich and I like ham in a casserole, I even like ham in my mac and cheese. I do not
you
like
even
ham
like
in my
ham
beer.
When you're telling a joke.
Well, I am a ham when I'm telling a joke.
There you go.
But I do not like ham in my wheat beer. I don't change anything about my packaging style. You know, you guys know that I'm fairly consistent about trying to reduce as much oxygen in the keg as I can. So do that. Don't just run amok and let this go. Obviously, if you're going to drink your wheat beer super fresh, you'll probably get away with it. But if you're like me and all your beers last for a little while because you make too much and, you know, you don't drink as much as that, good standard low O2 packaging processes are a good thing.
Yeah. Let's face it, no matter what, oxygen is the enemy of many kinds of food products, and that includes beer. And you always want to try to minimize it, although you don't necessarily have to go to crazy lengths if you don't feel like it.
Yep. All right. Any other thoughts on making a American wheat beer before we get into a recipe?
You know, if you want to really maintain that light color, you want to kind of like watch your boil vigor so that it doesn't get too intense and you end up with a lot of Maillard reactions. But, I don't think it's a huge worry. Just be aware that you may not want to like do a 90-minute boil or something like that.
Yeah. But otherwise, standard brewing techniques, take care, don't be a dummy, and ferment fast with healthy yeast.
Yeah, don't be a dummy.
All right, so standard American wheat beer recipe. I kind of build a lot of things if I'm working on an American wheat beer idea around this sort of core. And as I said, I tend to do my wheat beers very yellow. And so mine is for a 5-gallon batch of beer at about 1052-ish, right? So that mid-range, or actually, I guess by BGCP standards, the higher end of the range. But mid-range in terms of beer. At 1052, I use about 10 pounds of grain, and that's usually split 6 pounds of barley malt, 4 pounds of wheat malt. Ta-da! Pretty easy, right?
Yeah.
Single infusion mash, usually somewhere in that 150 to 152 range for about 60 minutes, and then about 20 to 25 IBUs of Magnum for 60 minutes. So anybody surprised by me using Magnum should probably go listen to some more of my recipes. And then if I'm just being absolutely classical, I'll do a knockout edition of Willamette, usually about an ounce or so, and then let that ride while I chill. So, Denny, if you're thinking about wheat beer from a base of malt and hops, what would you do differently?
Probably not much, man. I don't think that I would, worry so much about the hop stand character that you were talking about just now, but that's my interpretation. Like we're saying, American wheat is a beer that can really go a vast number of directions.
Yep. And so fermentation, like I said, I don't bother using the American Hefeweizen strains. I just use a Cal Ale strain, right? Because I usually have it on hand, and why not? Ferment it for about 2 weeks, carb it up, and go. Now, as Denny said, that's a pretty bog standard, easygoing, not terribly complex beer. As we were talking about above, you could add maybe a little bit of character malt if you want to push a little bit more orange. Just don't overdo it. Otherwise, you start going to American Dunkelweizen, which is really going to be weird. Just good basic standard template for a relatively neutral beer. clean and easy drinking beer. Now, that is absolutely perfect for all your summer parties, any festival that you go to, anywhere that you're going to be around the general public that doesn't necessarily want to think too hard about their beer. But having said that, there are lots of things that you can do with the style because it is a wonderful base for additional flavors. And by additional flavors, we don't mean habanero, bourbon barrel, marshmallow, blueberry. Did I miss any flavors in there? I probably did.
No, I don't think so.
But you can incorporate a number of those elements that I just made fun of in beers. But remember, our usual rules apply, which is keep things focused. Don't sort of lose the thread and go wandering around adding this, that, and the other. I usually like to keep kind of things focused around a single or pair of characters. I think beyond that, you start to get into complex, weird mathematical equations that the human palate is not capable of dealing with. Obviously, the classic. Denny and I both just talked about blueberry wheat beer. Yeah. So fruit is absolutely ubiquitous in this style.
I was going to say, yeah, pretty much you can throw any kind of fruit you like in there.
Yeah. And again, it can be as simple as adding lemon to the finished beer, right? I mean, after all, Widmer kind of did citrus as their thing. That was what made people go, ooh, this is fancy and different. But our usual sort of fruiting rules apply. I always like to add fruit later in the process so I can kind of preserve aromas. Don't really count on too much sweetness unless you're going to do something to stabilize the beer. And I think we've both done this the usual way, you know, puree, like cans of Oregon puree, frozen fruit. Frozen fruit works wonderfully here. Just, you know, freeze it up, then dump it in and let it thaw itself in the beer, let it leach out. Get your beautiful pink color that you get from your blueberries. You can use some of the syrups like Amaretti, for instance. So that, I think that was the one that the AHA has always been partnered with. But make sure you understand the flavors of those syrups first, because I don't think they all lend themselves to use in this way. Now, I've done citrus. I've done just about any berry that you can ever name, except for maybe what's the big one up in Oregon? Olala berries or whatever it is.
I could have told you until you asked me.
Schnozberries.
Marionberries.
Marionberries. All right, there you go. Never done a marionberry, but lots of different berries. Berries work wonderfully in a wheat beer. Strawberries are always going to be kind of a pain because strawberries don't actually have a lot of flavor, and so you have to use way more strawberry than you think you'd do. But again, keep it in mind, usual fruit levels apply. So I think most of the fruit levels that we've ever put into a book are based around wheat beer.
That's true. Yeah.
Like a pound to 2 pounds.
It's just the perfect base. Yeah.
A pound to 2 pounds per gallon. And with the more subtle fruit, obviously you can go even higher than that. And the fun one that I've done, I have a giant persimmon tree in my yard. I've done persimmons in beer. Very interesting characteristic, very classical too, from an American standpoint. But yeah, don't get carried away. Don't go for a giant melange of fruits, you know, I mean, except for maybe like the berry complex. But have fun with your fruit. And I think it works wonderfully up against wheat beer. Ooh, and now I had a really great idea. I'll talk about it later.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, this happens. Hops, obviously, we talked about the traditional version of the style is not a very hop-forward beer. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with hopping this up. We're Americans. We put hops in everything. And I think particularly with all the newfangled hops that are around here, all the new fruity hops, the ones that taste like gooseberry and melon and peach and guava and all that, they will go really well in an American wheat beer for the same reason that fruits go really, really well in an American wheat beer. Just like, actually in this particular case, given how close hazies are in a way to an American wheat beer, you know, basically pale malt and an adjunct. In this case, the adjunct is wheat as opposed to maybe oats. You could do all the usual hazy practices that you do here in a wheat beer and make a hazy wheat ale. Go for it. If that's your bag.
Yeah, that's right.
But I do think a good handful of dry hops, a good strong hop stand with a newfangled American hop or newfangled New World hop and New Zealand hops would actually be really cool. I think you could get a really good effect out of that. I've done Citra ales before, you know, Citra wheat ales, but I'm not sure you can still call Citra a newfangled hop. But regardless, I think it works pretty well. Now, the last one before we get into the weird idea I just had, souring. Most of the intentionally soured, wild, mixed cultured beer styles that are out there are all based around a white base anyway. And white base is really just wheat beer. So there is absolutely nothing in this world that says, hey, I made 10 gallons of wheat beer. You can kettle sour half of that batch and go for it and make yourself a nice sour ale out of it. And then add fruit, have fun. But I do think, you know, given that so many of our sour ales start with a wheat beer base anyway, you can totally run with that templatized recipe that I just put up there. Maybe without the hop stand in the finish, and turn that into a nice sour beer. Nothing's stopping you from doing it. And if you're already making the beer, why not? Yeah. And for that, just follow your standard sort of kettle souring practices, lactobacillus in the kettle, keep it warm, bring it to a boil, yada, yada, yada. The other thing, you could also actually do things properly and use mixed fermentation cultures and sour the beer that way. Just remember, it's not going to be ready in time for summer most of the time. So plan ahead. Getting into the weird area. One of the best beers I've ever had, or the best beer experiences I've ever had, was, I think it was the Seattle Homebrew Con. We poured an American wheat through a fresh randle of coffee beans. And I did not anticipate this working as well as it did. But you know what? It was really nice.
Could you taste much besides the coffee?
I mean, you got some of the doughiness, like that sweet doughy character of the of the wheat beer. But no, I mean, yeah, it was very coffee.
Yeah.
But it was coffee on top of a very pleasant tasting beer to begin with. So,
well, that's nice.
The other thing I will also point out, and this is what just kind of made me go, ooh, is wheat beer does actually serve as a good base for going up against spices. The only chili beer I think I've ever had in my life that I thought was worth a damn, that was specifically a chili beer, not like, hey, I incorporated chilies into the beer. This was Harold Gudbranson's jalapeno wheat beer that he did for the NHC for years ago. And I think if I remember correctly, when I scored that, I gave it a 45.
Whoa.
And I am not a chili beer fan.
Yeah.
But that was really good. And along that line, the thing that made me kind of go, ooh, as much as I've just been talking now about, like, hey, you know, kind of keep a singular focus around things, you could also totally take inspiration from things like Tepache and make a American wheat ale with pineapple and a little chili. Yeah, and kind of get that little, you know, South American Mexican vibe in there. You know, give yourself a little bit more of a dance in the glass. That was what I actually went, ooh, about, because I was thinking about pineapple and the, ooh, but you could also do chilies.
Not my kind of beer, but might be somebody's kind of beer.
Well, and part of the reason I've been thinking about that is because I've been eating a lot of pineapple recently, but doing it in what I think is now the best way, which is pineapple with tagine sprinkled on it. That works really well. And tagine is just really chili peppers, salt, and lime powder. I may have to make that now. Dang it. The other thing I will also say, chai mix also makes a really interesting idea. Chai masala mix. Our friend Kip, from formerly of LA Ale Works back when he was homebrewing, he always did a soda and a wheat beer based around Thai tea mix. So both of those flavors work pretty well as well. All right, Denny, those are the couple of things I can think of to do with American wheat beer beyond just making a wheat beer. Anything else you want to throw in the mix?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, then, as always, if you have other ideas that you think that we missed, other inspirations that people can take, other things that you've done, email us at podcast@experimentalbrew.com, and we will make sure to include it in the show notes and the next time that we talk about this. But in the meanwhile, go out, make yourself an American wheat beer.
Or not.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us on another episode of The Brew Files. We hope that you enjoyed this look at American wheat beer. It is, as Denny put it, an inoffensive beer, but an inoffensive beer with lots of possibilities attached to it. Plus, it's also the sort of beer that you can serve to people who don't drink beer, as proved by Denny.
That's right.
All right. Now, remember, if you have show ideas, styles, brewers, techniques, ingredients, etc., you can drop us a line at podcast@experimentalbrew.com. You can reach us at Denny@experimentalbrew.com or Drew@experimentalbrew.com. You can find us on Twitter at @EXPBrewing, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Reddit, and just about every homebrew forum out there. And of course, you can always find us at www.experimentalbrew.com, where you can read the first two chapters of Experimental Homebrewing as we are talking. Now, don't forget, you can support the podcast by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can click the AHA or BYO links on the website, and by going to Patreon and pledging a buck or two or more to our charitable cause, which for this part of the year is still being decided.
But not for long, not for long. We're going to come up with something.
There you go. Now, until next time, remember to always brew wacky.
Or brew experimentally.
All right, and the brew is out there.